Greetings, parish orphans and retrogrades. Timothy Gordon here with a special show for you today about the nature of the 20th century takeover of America by the apparatchiks. Parish orphans and retrogrades, I bring you a special guest today, Miss Rebecca Koffler, who has an interesting story and a fascinating book that's new on Regnery Press called Putin's Playbook, Russia's Secret Plan to Defeat America. Ms. Koffler is a Russian-born, English-Russian bilingual U.S. intelligence expert on Russian doctrine and strategy, including cyber tradecraft. Very interesting stuff. She served as senior intelligence officer in the Defense Intelligence Agency from 2008 to late 2016, and she joins me today on Rules for Retrogrades to talk about her new book, Putin's Playbook, and her article up on Fox News, which is called USSR 2.0, My Adopted U.S. Homeland is Giving Me Flashbacks to the Russia I Fled. Ms. Koffler, thanks for joining me today. It's great to finally meet you.
Thank you very much, Tim. It's a pleasure to be here.
I'm excited to read your book. I haven't yet read it, Putin's Playbook. It's new on Regnery Press, the greatest conservative publication house in the world. When did that book come out?
It came out on August 27, just a little bit more than a week ago.
Oh, congratulations. Yeah, that's exciting.
I'm sorry, July.
July 27th, yeah. A lot of times when the book goes into pre-order, the pub date is actually after people who have ordered the book start receiving it in the mail. So it's exciting. A lot of work goes into the writing of any book, and it's an exciting time to have one coming out. So congrats. I have not read the book, but I've read your article, USSR 2.0, on Fox News, and it was excellent. You want to give us the upshot?
Sure. The reason I've written that article was because I've been increasingly concerned for the past couple of years, especially, that I am seeing some signs that are reminding me that are going on in America, in our country, the land of freedom, of liberty, of all things, where my mom sent me as a young person. I am looking at it and I'm wondering, it reminds me of the USSR and the things, basically it's the all the socialism type of things, you know, the promises of free stuff, the cancel culture, suppression of speech, you know, suppression of religious conservative views, deplatforming. You name it, it's basically really frightening to me, and I don't want my children to experience the same horrors that I did behind the Iron Curtain growing up.
I don't know if viewers out there, who are broadly speaking Christian, a little more specifically speaking conservative Catholics, understand that this isn't some crass or crude analogy between what happened in the USSR in the early 20th century and what's happening now. It's a form-fitting, tailor-made playbook. So more than an analogy, it seems to be a playbook they follow. You mentioned some of the steps, which are, you know, essentially tattletaling by young people on their parents, cancel culture, deplatforming, increased aggression that the beer bug of 2020 has normalized. How do we convince people out there that are conservative-ish that this is not some analogy? This is a playbook that's actually being followed.
You're exactly right. It's a playbook. It's the Soviet playbook. And in fact, the Soviets had a program of which the Central Intelligence Agency was warned about by a defector, a Soviet defector. His name was Yuri Bezmenov. He warned us that the USSR, the Soviet intelligence, had a four-phase program to transform the United States from the land of freedom to a totalitarian socialist state. And what we see now being proposed by the self-proclaimed socialist Bernie Sanders and the Democrats and the leftist is exactly what we were warned about, and we really did not heed the warning. So everything that we see from the critical race theory, which is effectively based on the Marxist ideology, this is the doctrine that I was brainwashed as a child, and I see myself, you know, and my children being brainwashed right now. So funny you should mention Catholics. Even though my family is Jewish, my husband and I are Jewish, we made the decision to pull our kids out of the public schools, I call them the government schools, and into Catholic schools, because that's where you get the traditional conservative education that teaches self-reliance and all these other wonderful things that America has been about.
Indeed. And unfortunately, even Catholic schools and Catholic parishes, to the tune of 90 to 95% of them, have been infiltrated as well. So I'm a Catholic telling you, you got to watch what your kids are being taught. It's transsexualism at, you know, over half of the Catholic schools out there. Now, I do want to ask you about Yuri Brezhmanov. Sorry if I'm saying his name weird, but there are four stages to the crisis. It's demoralization, number one. Number two, destabilization. Three, crisis. And four, normalization. Can you break down these four steps that Brezhmanov talks about a little bit for us? And are we at the end of crisis stage three, or at the beginning of normalization? They demoralized us probably sometime in the 1960s, according to the common tale. You know, the late 60s, early 70s in America was a time of moral decadence and demoralization. Destabilization during the late Cold War era in the 80s and even the 90s. Crisis, 2020. And now the normalization of crisis conditions, i.e. eternal lockdown. Is that a fair assessment?
That is a very fair assessment. You really nailed it, Timothy. Interestingly, Bizmanov actually, when he was debriefed, he was telling us that the Soviets have assessed that they completed already at that time the first stage, and they were well ahead of their schedule, so to speak, the so-called five-year plan not only demoralizing, but destabilizing America. And we are in a crisis stage right now. And actually the intelligence community has assessed, of which I was a proud member, assessed that we're in the new normal right now. So after the 2016 election interference, which was the most successful covert influence operation by the Russians in the history of covert influence operations, as characterized by the former NSA and CIA director, General Hayden. So after that, all, you know, hell, so to speak, broke loose. But the Russian interference was completely not about what the leftist media told us it was. As an intelligence officer, I am telling you that Putin's goal was not to elect Trump. It was to destabilize our society according to the program that they had, that you just outlined for us by Yuri Bizmanov.
But how did the destabilization work? Because we did wind up with Trump. I'm not saying Putin wanted Trump, but did are you saying Putin wanted Hillary in 16?
Putin really doesn't have a preference in terms of which kind of U.S. president. He's anti-U.S., right? Obviously, somebody who is of a weak character plays into his hand. Someone who can be easily manipulated, such as our current chief executive, President Biden, whom the Russians have assessed to be weak, both in terms of his policies and in terms of his cognitive abilities. there's a potential cognitive impairment that the Russians have concluded may be going on with Biden. And we see, in terms of lack of response, regardless of what Putin does, whether he and his intelligence services hack our critical infrastructure, including our government, our business networks, all the way up to our nuclear facilities, and hacking even our beef and burgers, so to speak, and our gasoline, our strategic reserves, Biden administration has not fought back. The same applies to President Obama. Putin was able to trick President Obama into several things that benefited the Russian interests instead of American interests. And so that is the preference, but typically they don't really seek, they don't believe they are capable. They're that, you know, omnipotent and powerful that they can actually enable the election of a specific president. They play both sides of the aisle to sow discord, to foment social unrest, and really wage the destabilization strategy that we just talked about.
So is it fair to characterize that the Russians, the post-Soviets, they use geopolitical statecraft and some combination of cultural demoralization and destabilization, meaning basically make the West less Christian, or do they favor one or the other? Putin is known as friendly to churches in Russia, right? Is that a lie? Is that a mischaracterization that Putin has been very Christian friendly to opening churches back up in Russia? Because that's the way the story comes down to us. Is that misinformation?
So it's a complex issue. As we remember, you know, even our own President George Bush looked into Putin's eye and saw potentially a Christian man. So Putin claims himself that he is a believer, a spiritual person. And he maybe right now, I've spoken with sources who claim that Putin has become a Christian person, but as a former intelligence officer, I myself did not believe it's credible. And also as someone who grew up in the former Soviet Union, I know that it's simply impossible, you know, for somebody who was religious to join the KGB. So right. He was raised with that mindset. His family is basically from that kind of lineage, the secret services, which is very different, you know, from our intelligence services. I believe that Putin uses religion as a geopolitical weapon, as a statecraft that you just talked about, in order to deceive Americans and Westerners that we are all similar and all alike. And this is very similar to what they were doing back during the Cold War when they were targeting the leftists and the Democrats. And so now they switched the targets, but the playbook is the same. We cannot believe this man.
So Yuri Brezhmanov laid out demoralization, destabilization, crisis, and then normalization as a four-step Soviet plan to take down the U.S. The crisis, capital C, makes a lot of sense if we configure it as what happened with the bug, capital T, capital B, in late 2019, early 2020, and that's still going on. Are we at the end of the crisis or the beginning of the normalization period, the new normal, build back better, the great reset, whatever you want to call it? Is the goal globalization? That doesn't seem to be Putin's game, is it? I mean, what role does capital T, capital B, the bug, have to play in this, in as vague a terms as you can name the thing?
Sure. Putin is an opportunist. When he sees a good window of opportunity to amplify existing struggles that Americans may be experiencing, he's all over it. So he has taken the bug narrative and ran with it. He ran several disinformation, operations, basically trying to portray that somehow America was responsible for it. But the problem is really not so much Putin with regard to the bug. The problem is actually that our intelligence community has become so politicized that it is not able to speak truth to power, and it is not able to conclude, to make rather nonpartisan assessments. In other words, now that we have discovered that the theory of the bug leaking from the specific institute that we know about is a legitimate theory that was effectively suppressed and not even looked at by both the intelligence community, and then it was suppressed by the big tech, right? So right. That is the real danger. And if we don't understand the root cause of the bug, if we simply deny that a certain country, China, is really behind it, using it as its own potentially, bioweapon, then we may miss future capabilities and future destabilizing weapons that are being used by other countries. And believe me, Putin has been watching. Other adversaries of our country have been watching how we are reacting to the bug and how little it actually takes to completely shut down our society and take our economy down and our people's spirit, because it's the American spirit that is our greatest weapon. And they've been able to really weaken that spirit.
Now, this might be more information than you can say, or maybe more than is advisable to say here on YouTube with our overlords deigning against the publication of such information. But back in, I think, was it early April or late March of 2020, not 2021, 2020, the story broke about the Wuhan lab where this bug comes from. And it was essentially verified as early as then, whatever that was, early 2020. Then the story went into a period of dormancy after I saw it verified, vindicated in several good news outlets like the Wall Street Journal. And then it went away for about 12 calendar months, where if you mentioned it, the W word, Wuhan, this is from a Wuhan lab, not a Chinese wet market, you got deplatformed. Until about March or April of 2021, like I said, 12 calendar months later. Then all of a sudden, things opened up and it became the deciders, the elites on top, I think in our own American intelligence agencies and things like that, they started allowing people to talk about the strangeness of the cover-up of the Wuhan lab, even though it had been vindicated over a year before and then basically blacklisted. You couldn't even say the words Wuhan without getting kicked off of big tech and without being ridiculed by the major networks, and presumably the order came down from the intelligence agency, which is very left in America now. What the heck happened where it became okay to talk about again in spring of this year?
So it's basically, it was completely Soviet-esque. This sort of censorship of the information and suppression of actually a legitimate intelligence hypothesis, because the way that we do business, when we do our analysis, mm-hmm. we run the primary analytic line, and then we always do what is called the devil's advocate analysis, right? In other words, the alternative. And the alternative analysis is supposed to be encouraged in the intelligence community. But because of what happened with the whole politicization, the alternative analysis was suppressed. And then, like you said, when they couldn't really, suppress it any longer, So it had to come out, and all of a sudden, you know, it began to be okay somewhat to talk on some, you know, in some outlets about this, about the Wuhan lab, like you called. I was, that's exactly what I meant in my previous response, but I was a little bit crypto.
Yeah, sorry, I wasn't trying to make you too gun shy. Yeah.
Again, yeah. I'm just, well, also I'm an intelligence officer. I'm so used to speaking code. And I'm also, you know, a former Soviet citizen where censorship was just a way of life. We were always afraid, you know, to say what we thought, for the fear of being, you know, intercepted by the government. And we had this, you know, phrase, it's not a phone conversation. So that's why I was like very cryptic. But yes, it's totally Soviet task when you could be, you know, losing your job, or you could be kicked out of the social media, basically out of the public square for even mentioning a word. Right. This is completely, it's just mind-boggling to me, because this is what I was growing up with, where we were afraid to say a word, you know.
We're discussing Miss Rebecca Koffler's new book on Regnery Press, Putin's Playbook, Russia's Secret Plan to Defeat America. We've been discussing it in the context of the bizarre year 2020. And I'd like to shift, if we can, to your interesting Fox News piece called USSR 2.0, My Adopted U.S. Homeland is Giving Me Flashbacks to the Russia I Fled, because I've actually been able to read this one. I'm looking forward to reading your book, but I have not yet got it. You just referenced, Ms. Koffler, the expression that you reference in your article, where you would say, this is not a phone conversation. We can't have this conversation on the phone. I've said this a lot of times on YouTube to my YouTube interviewees. I hope I didn't make you too gun shy. Like, this is not a YouTube conversation. This is not a Twitter conversation, because we have real live actual censors. This is something the left in America in the 1990s was like really trigger happy about, painting right-wing people as, oh, you're anti-free speech, you're like a censor, man. They would tell you in the 90s, and that was just when we'd say, oh, don't say really, really filthy language around kids or something. That's not actual censorship, that's self-censorship. But now we actually woke up to find ourselves really and truly censored in 2020 and 2021. What does this mean when you reference the idea of a USSR citizen growing up in fear, having to say things like, ooh, this is not a phone conversation? Can you explain that?
This is very scary and concerning and alarming to me, because it is only going to progress if we do not squash it, you know, like an insect, like my dad would say, who, by the way, still my father now lives in America, just like me, but he still, because he's, you know, 85 years old, and something like that is always ingrained with, you know, into you. He still does not talk about certain things on the phone here in America. And I tell him, Dad, nobody's interested in what you know, have to say. They're not going to spy on you here. But I couldn't be wrong, because after all, we just have, you know, we had the news that, Tucker Carlson, you know, was intercepted by the National Security Agency. And we know that Carter Page was actually under surveillance by the NSA and with the help of the FBI, who actually, you know, set him up and submitted a fraudulent application and lied on the, falsified the application by saying that Carter Page was not an asset for the Central Intelligence Agency, when he indeed was an asset, meaning he was risking his life collecting intelligence for our government from the Russians, you know, meeting with the Russians. And all of a sudden he became the target of surveillance. So these things are very, very dangerous. We are completely on a slippery slope. And the you mentioned self-censorship. Self-censorship is actually the highest form of censorship, because that means then you have the population so scared of speaking truth to power or even expressing their opinion to their fellow, you know, neighbor, so to speak, or in front of an employee, that they are holding back. Imagine the things that are not written, the books that are not written, the movies that are not produced, anything that is not done for the fear. And that's a straight road down towards the Orwellian, you know, totalitarian, you know, state that we don't want our country to become. Because as Bismanov said, unlike him, we have nowhere to go. This is still the best country in the world. After this one, there's nowhere to go.
Yeah, I originally used the term self-censorship in the way that we were all just called to prudence when we speak. But the new, the pernicious kind of self-censorship that you're calling the highest form of the apparatchik's playbook is when a worker at work is coaxed through social pressure and the threat of cancellation to not even bring up his opinion at the water cooler. That seems to reign on high, particularly with regard to the bug and the looming threats that are insinuated by the bug and the Maxine, as we call it here.
Yes.
Retrogrades. I mean, it's striking stuff. And there is a new lockdown double standard. People were talking about Obama's birthday party, elites vacationing, elites get toilet paper when no one else does. How is this Soviet styled totalitarianism? Shades of, you know, Stalin.
Right. Well, you mentioned toilet paper, Timothy, and not to take this conversation down, you know, sort of the low road, but I feel like I have to say it to Americans, because that is something that hopefully will be so, you know, vivid, so to speak, that hopefully it'll give us a wake up call. So as you mentioned during the, you know, the Wuhan period, so to speak, we experienced double standard. So the elites were creating rules for the rest of us, you know, locking us down, you know, unable, you know, to send our schools to kids, kids to school, and unable, you know, to go without a mask to places, and even unable to go to work, right? So while they themselves did everything that they wanted, you know, go to expensive restaurants, travel, et cetera, et cetera. Yep. So in the Soviet Union, there was the same kind of segregation, if you will, when the party the Communist Party members, which basically were, you know, the government apparatchiks, if as you call them, they had everything while the rest of us struggled. They were treated at different hospitals. They shopped at different shops, and they had things that we didn't have, and we didn't have basics. We didn't have, you mentioned the toilet paper. Guess what? We were using Pravda as the toilet paper. It was just not available. Nothing like sanitary products, you know, for women, you know, especially for women, so hard. You know, it's atrocious. So if we don't stop the socialism business, we're going down the same road. And the whole, you know, idea that free stuff is a good thing is false. Because socialism, once you start promising everything for free, you have to take it from somewhere. Right. And that somewhere is not going to exist. No Jeff Bezos, no Elon Musk is going to, you know, work hard, trying to innovate and come up with these amazing, you know, revolutionary products and services that we've been able to enjoy in this country if they know that the government is going to take most of it and redistribute it. So eventually the system just runs out of other people's money, as Margaret Thatcher said. It doesn't work. It failed everywhere.
Precisely. Yeah, once even basics like toilet paper are being essentially rationed by the government during crisis, it's a crappy situation. That's a bad pun. Another bad pun is when you mentioned, you reversed, you said, oh, we're not even allowed to bring our kids to schools. But first you said schools to kids. That reminded me, 1.6 million Americans, Rebecca, began bringing schools to their kids, which is to say homeschool, which is what my wife and I have long advocated doing, because in far too many situations, even Catholic schools are infiltrated by the kind of psychological operation, transgenderist, homosexualist, demoralizing, destabilizing, beer bug embracing propaganda that they would get in a public school. So what we've been doing is pushing homeschool to our listeners, parish orphans and retrogrades out there. And as they well know by now, I'm opening up a newer, more expansive program of homeschool aid on my channel. If you go to timothyjgordon.com in September, starting September the 1st, we have even more homeschool classes, Latin one, algebra one, for those out there that are looking to homeschool their kids. So bringing schools to kids is a good idea. And 1.6 million Americans pulled their kids out of the public schools. I'm now urging fellow Catholics to pull their kids even out of the Catholic schools. There are some good Catholic academies left, but they're deeply, deeply troubled. The book is Putin's Playbook, written by Rebecca Koffler. We're also talking about the USSR 2.0 article you wrote for Fox News about the U.S. The final question I have for you is this. It's about the U.S. itself. How compromised are we? By this, I mean our intelligence agencies. They basically seem to be badly compromised. You called them partisanized. I don't trust the intel we get. It seems to be some potent combo of misinformation and disinformation. Think of November of 2020. What happened then? First week of November this year seemed to be a heady dosage of misinformation / disinformation bromide. And then also the American right wing since November, with our compromised agencies and media and big tech, seems to have gone down a populist road that in some ways is good, but in other ways seems to condemn American liberty and say, oh, American liberty leads to transsexualism and widespread immorality. And they're no longer, a lot of fellow right-wingers, I'm a man of the right, are no longer distinguishing, as Thomas Aquinas and the medieval scholastics did, between liberty, which is ordered freedom, moral freedom, and license, which is not ordered freedom, freedom for its own sake. So you talk about this some in your article for Fox News, and I just would like to have you maybe comment. Here in America, how compromised are we by the left? And on the right wing, has the populist right spurned liberty as license? Isn't there a meaningful distinction between ordered freedom and freedom for its own sake?
Well, compromised to me has a very specific meaning as an intelligence officer. Typically what it means for us is compromised from the counterintelligence standpoint, meaning that we have foreign assets actually working within our government and our intelligence services. And that I cannot comment on. In terms of compromised in a sense, our intelligence agencies so politicized that we don't trust them to make an accurate assessment with regard to, let's say, what happened with the bug. We know that we cannot trust them, right? We have already talked about it. We can't trust them with regard to what happened in 2016 election, where our upper echelons, you know, the corrupt intelligence officials effectively took Putin's playbook and deployed it against America, lying that the Russians have compromised President Trump and his campaign. So we know that that is not true. That has been disproven by their own, you know, Mueller. So we can't trust
In your deliberate judgment, Ms. Coffler, this you could just give, I didn't mean to break in. Can we trust what our own intel agency says about, not to be too pointed, no, sure. You're talking about November 2016. How about November 2020? You can just give a yes or no there. Should we trust the degree of political slantedness out of our own intelligence agency there?
So it's just that one is a little complicated. Again, I can't fully trust them. No, I guess the answer is overall is no. I can't even trust them with something as unrelated to domestic policy as the so-called Russia-China strategic partnership, which they assess that is taking place. And that is simply not true. Those are not partners. This is all disinformation that they want us to believe. So no, I can't trust the intelligence agencies, right? Well, I'll give you this example that will be very demonstrative. When you actually do get my book and you open it up, you will notice that there are black lines all over. It is because the government censored my book. It blacked out text on 31 pages.
Wow.
Because they did not want Americans to know exactly what happened, you know, with regard to Russia, how unprepared they are in terms of handling Putin's cyber warfare and Putin's overall Soviet-style playbook. And they also didn't want Americans to know how badly the US government and the national security apparatus has bungled the Russian threat. So they have dragged their feet. I had to submit my book for mandatory review as a former intelligence officer. And I was concerned that this book will never see the light of day. So that is how, you know, little we can trust them. And in terms of the populist, you know, movement that you mentioned, it is another very, you know, complicated area to me, because it seemed like, you know, the ideas have been the true ideas, you know, of liberty, of freedom, have been hijacked by both sides, and they've been completely stewed on its head and manipulated. And we are effectively losing our ground here in America. And we really need to fight back against socialism, fight back against censorship, the critical race theory, all the transgender, you know, perversion. And then I don't speak about, like, I have no problem if people want to, when they're mature, when they're adults, want to go ahead and mutilate themselves, go for it. None of my business. But don't you be brainwashing my children, you know, with all this nonsense. There are two genders, there's a man and there's a woman, and it's very simple, and it's been like that for a century. And so all that nonsense that our kids right now are bombarded with, it's actually dangerous.
Isn't it dangerous on the right for, and I deal with this every day in the podcast with the guests I have, right-wingers have looked at what the libertinist left, the lunatic left, radical left have done culturally. I'm not talking about the level of government psyops, but cultural psyops. What they've done in terms of characterizing true, good, moral freedom of the West, built on Christianity, and characterized it as license. And it seems to me that the populist right has looked at that. They look at it suspiciously. They're eyeing it. They want to reject everything that's bad, you know, drag queen story hour. That has come to represent what American liberty really is for the populist right. And I'm like, well, of course we have to reject drag queen story hour. This should be rejected by all 50 state legislatures, the proper species of federalism in place. But don't characterize American true liberty, you know, 18th and 19th century American liberty, the thing that this country was founded on, as a grant by God, as license. And someone like you, you make some really, I think, beautiful natural appeals, just anecdotal appeals at the beginning of your USSR 2.0 Fox News article, where you're like, look, I came from the USSR. We want true American freedom, right-wing American freedom, you know, negative liberties. We don't want to be interfered with. This doesn't mean that because we embrace liberty, that we embrace the left's perverted caricature of liberty like Drag Queen Story Hour. Could you close on that, just as an immigrant to this country, what liberty has meant to you?
Liberty has meant everything to me. And I would go as far as saying that only if someone who lived without liberty, without freedom, can truly understand its meaning. The minute I landed in this country, I knew it was different. I felt free because nobody was, you know, listening to what I was saying. Nobody was reporting me for doing something wrong, you know. But clearly, these liberties cannot be taken to extremes and to absurdities, you know, and propagandizing drag queen whatever to our children, because that's not liberty. That is perversion. And we should not conflate the two. It's absurd. There's liberty and freedom, and then there's all kinds of, you know, perversion and extremism. There's nothing else that I can say. It's just common sense.
Beautiful. Yeah, liberty is always oriented at our moral goodness, and that's reflected by the many, many founders of this country, most of whom were Protestant Christians. I happen to be a Catholic Christian, but the point is there that what immigrants of all stripe came to this country for is the moral freedom to pursue their flourishing and their best good life for them and their families, the way you did. And it's really touching the way you reference this in your USSR 2.0 article. I think in an interesting article, it's the most interesting aspect. You should consider writing more about that, just to kind of cri de coeur, a cry from the heart. Look, USA is becoming USSR. Anyway, I really appreciate you spending the last 45 minutes here on Rules for Retrogrades. Your book is Putin's Playbook. It's Regnery Press, and it's great. You want to tell people where they can get that?
Oh, really? Anywhere. It's available on Amazon. And if someone doesn't like, you know, Amazon and Jeff Bezos, like a bunch of people don't right now, they can go to Barnes & Noble's website, or go to any bookstore, really, where they normally purchase books. It's available everywhere. And I will continue writing on the topic that you mentioned. I'm already envisioning that my second book will be called Sovietization of America, How I Survived Socialism, and I Will Fight It from Taking Root in America. So I am such a committed fighter against socialism. We cannot allow this in this country.
That's excellent. We're glad to have you in the fight. Miss Rebecca Koffler, thank you for your time. Parish Orphans and Retrogrades out there, remember, pull your kids out of the schools, homeschool them if you have the means to do so. Go to timothyjgordon.com and click enroll. Also, get out, if you can, of your blue states, get to red states, go to realestateforlife.org. They will make that massive headache less massive of doing a large move. Go to realestateforlife.org. Like, subscribe, share, and hit the notify bell so that you can watch this show regularly. Also, please remember that these are fighting times, and Ms. Rebecca Koffler has helped us to remember the terms over which we fight. The USSR style politics and psyops are coming here to the USA. We need to fight them. Go to timothyjgordon.com, and we fight them by educating our young truly. Thank you very much. God bless you. Deus Vult. Have a great day. Parashorphins and Retrogrades, I have talked to you some about the need for recommissioning great art in the Catholic world and the world in general to re-beautify the world. I did a show with my friend, Andrew Coleman, a few months back. And at the beginning of this period, which separates then and now, he undertook this amazing project for a St. Mark relic that was given to me. My friend Andrew here is a, what you call a talented man. He has crafted this. He's here from the neighboring state of Louisiana to install it today. And we're going to show you a little bit about that right now.
What I wanted to go off was a bit of a Venice style carving of a lion. So the symbolism that I put in this are just different Markan images. I have the keys of St. Peter there at the bottom, because the story is that Mark traveled with Peter as Peter preached the gospel. He took his notes and he wrote the gospel of Mark according to Peter's preaching. So there's a little plug in there. There are 16 chapters in the gospel of Mark. And so right around where the relic itself is going to be housed, there's 16 petals. And then the last real important symbolism is there's a traditional story of when Mark was traveling throughout Europe. He was in Venice, where his body now is today. And he had an angel appear to him. And he said, "Peace be with you, Mark, my evangelist. Here shall your body lie."
You can get such a friend. You might not know him personally, but you can commission Coleman's Handcrafted, which we're now plugging. Andrew Coleman and Coleman's Handcrafted. Thank you guys so much. What a talent,
thank
sir.
Thank you.